You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire, 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa, ko Jemima Houston tōka ingoa, nō mai haere mai ki te wire mō tēnei rā. Kia ora and welcome to The Wire for Tuesday, the 3rd of November. My name is Jemima and I'm your host. It's just me in studio today, so you'll just be hearing my voice for the next hour, which I hope isn't too bad of a thing. I hope you're having a lovely day out there. It is so humid in Auckland at the moment. What is going on? I just can't ever get used to it, not being from Auckland originally. Whenever summer comes round, I'm like, oh gosh, why am I here? But it's lovely to have nice warm weather. We have a great show coming up for you today. Got some awesome interviews for you. Ewhai Akine, what is coming up on the show today? I spoke to Tania Sawicki-Mead from Just Speak, which is an organisation seeking transformative change in New Zealand's criminal justice system, about the preliminary cannabis referendum results that were announced last week and what the new government must do to reform our drug laws. We have a live interview coming up with the new Green Party MP, Dr. Elizabeth Kerikeri, who will talk about what she will bring to Parliament this term. I also talk to Rainbow Youth Executive Director Frances Arns about the announcement yesterday that the 2023 census will include sex at birth, gender identity and sexual orientation questions. Elizabeth Haig from the Department of Conservation speaks to me about a new citizen science app that helps with the tracking of blockages in freshwater fish passageways that anybody can get involved in. And finally, I talk to Oscar Burge from the New Zealand Blood Service about the change in criteria for plasma donation and how people can get involved. So big show today. I hope you're looking forward to it. He aho o whakaaro. I would love to hear your thoughts on any of these pieces. So tuku pātui mai. You can send me through a text on 5395 or Wai Mai Rane. Give me a call in studio on 309 3879. Always love to hear from you. Always love to hear your lovely voices. So give me a call. Also, after the show, koe e wariwari e ahi ana koutou te whakarongo ki enei kōrero anō he pakihiri rokiroki maronga i te pai tukutuku o Irarangi Poho. Me haere ki 95 BFM irakati.com. You can catch all of these stories and more by podcast on the 95 BFM website, 95bfm.com. You can also check out all of our social medias. The news team is 95 BFM News on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook if you want to catch up with any of the podcasts of what's going on The Wire. We have some really, really awesome pieces coming through from the news team, as per usual, because they're lovely. But anyway, let's crack into it.
Irirangi Poho, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.
So with the preliminary cannabis referendum results announced last Friday and the final results set to be announced this Friday, I thought I would speak to a group that is calling for the laws surrounding drug use in New Zealand to be changed. Just Speak is a youth-powered movement for transformational change of criminal justice towards a fair, just and flourishing Aotearoa. I spoke to the group's director, Tania Sawicki-Mead, about the preliminary results of the cannabis referendum. We spoke about what the next steps need to be for decriminalising and cannabis if the results do not flip at the end of the week, and why it is important for the new government to continue to focus on drug reform in New Zealand. I will just say a quick little apologies for the sound quality of this interview. It's a little bit crackly, so bear with. Gets better towards the end, towards the middle, sorry. I began by asking Tania what Just Speak's position is on the preliminary referendum results.
We are obviously really disappointed and a bit heartbroken with the preliminary results from the cannabis referendum. I think it was such an important opportunity for us to change the system and create one that would put the well-being of people, put education, put health at the front of our response to drugs, which would have had an enormous impact in particular for Rangatahi Māori, who are over-criminalised and over-penalised for cannabis use. Currently in our society. We haven't given up hope yet. We do think that there's some chance that we thought this will get to the officials given some of the demographic information we know about people who do use official votes. But I think that, you know, the biggest takeaway for us is that we have come too far in this conversation of the last year and a half about why our current system is failing, why criminalisation and prohibition has failed, to just stop here. And I think the challenge really is to this government is to figure out how brave they're going to be in creating a system that will actually work for New Zealanders.
So as you just said, you know, these are the preliminary results and the final results will be announced on Friday. And some people are certainly holding out for the special votes to be sure of the final result. Do you think this is something people should be focusing on, or should we already be looking into the future just in case it doesn't flip, because it is also said that it's not overly likely that it will?
Yeah, I mean, no one knows really, of course.
Totally.
This election because of COVID was unpredictable. Many people voted earlier, of course, so all of the assumptions that we previously might have made about turnout, who votes from where and who votes at all, given that this year, of course, was the first year, they very much streamlined the processes for people who wanted to enrol and vote on the same day. I think it is a long shot, obviously. We know that we need to get about 68% of the candidate referendum votes as yes votes to change the result. But we do, you know, I guess we can give ourselves those 3 days and hope, and then, you know, come the following Monday, it's all about what happens next.
So I just wanted to talk a little bit about what needs to change in terms of New Zealand's law around cannabis. If we don't get the yes vote and this isn't the bill that's on the table anymore, what needs to change?
Frankly, I think that the government should take the cannabis legalisation and control bill that they put out to referendum and simply pass it with the supermajority that they now have, given that it is a pretty solid, well-researched and well-thought-out piece of legislation. To me, that is the best and most effective method that we have for addressing the harms of criminalisation and of prohibition and of ensuring that we protect people from dangerous substances, which is the danger of decriminalisation, that we have no control over supply. Andrew Little has commented, of course, that is not on the cards for them. He is no longer now the Minister of Justice, so I don't know if that changes things. But certainly we would want at least the review of the Misuse of Drugs Act, which happened about a year ago, to be revisited, because while that made some good headway in that police now have to prove it's in the public interest to prosecute someone for possession of drugs, the bias that we see playing out and the racism that we see playing out in police decision-making, where Māori is still much more likely to be criminalised for drug use than Pākehā, it remains a problem. So that problem has not gone away with decriminalisation, and I don't see under the current settings how it can. So I think that MODA, the Misuse of Drugs Act, really needs to be first on the table. But also we need the conversation around the referendum. I think made it clear to many, many people, even those who might have voted no, that the status quo is not working, and we can't keep going as we're going, having had this conversation in which we got over the stigma and the shame of people talking about drug use, about the shame that is associated with that, and about the lack of support that's available. So a really important first step would be to increase the amount of funding for treatment and prevention programs and increase the amount of alternative resolutions that are available to judges and to the courts in the criminal justice system to reduce the harm that criminalisation does. So to divert people out of the justice system and into treatment and back into the community, because sending people to prison or giving them a conviction and a community sentence that will sit with them for the rest of their life does nothing to address or reduce the harm of drug usage, and it creates a whole bunch of harm in and of itself that sits with a person for their lifetime. So I think the government has an opportunity now to do something really brave and really courageous that would actually make a huge impact for groups of people who are suffering under this current law, and I would include people who use medicinal cannabis in that group as well. Where under the current system, medicinal cannabis is very expensive to access, and in some cases not the appropriate substance for them. And really it's up to them about how willing they are to be courageous and to do the right thing.
On that point about the government being courageous, I know you mentioned that Andrew Little has said that decriminalisation of cannabis won't be on the table because the public has voted, and if it votes no, then we should respect that. Do you think as well the combination of that stance and also COVID-19 being a huge governmental focus at the moment may mean that drug reform is sort of pushed to the back of the line when it comes to the progression that the government could make in the next term.
Yeah, I think the frustrating thing is that these things are not mutually exclusive, that we know that the stress and anxiety that was caused by COVID-19 and the economic pain that may come as a result, or you know, we are already feeling, will exacerbate existing social issues. So it is prudent, I think, to focus on the ways in which our current system criminalises people who are struggling with their mental health, struggling with addiction, in order to make sure that we can weather the storm better together. And, you know, drug law reform is one part of that. There are many other parts, I think, of that, but I certainly think that is a really appropriate one and an important one. I don't think that there is any reason for a government with the courage of its convictions to say that just because a referendum, which frankly, in my view, is a terrible process for something this complicated, because a referendum didn't reach 50%, that there is no mandate. Public opinion is not a fixed and stable thing. You know, people's attitudes and beliefs around particularly complex issues like drug law reforms will change when political leaders show courage and show us the way that we can go, the direction that we can go in. And I think that it's, you know, irresponsible to say, oh, well, we asked a pretty confusing and simple question and then didn't really enter into a dialogue about it, didn't advocate for why this would be a better position. And I'm speaking here of, you know, a number of our political leaders. And then when misinformation and outright lies then swept into the vacuum that was left by that lack of leadership, people threw up their hands and said, oh, well, you know, the public are against it. I think that's a deeply simplistic reading of what happened in this debate. And I also think that regardless of whether a majority of people support it or not, at the moment our current laws are racist and are failing, do nothing to address the harm of drugs that are already in communities and create more harm in and of themselves. So, yeah, I think the argument that this isn't a priority is really just a political one born out of a lack of courage. And I do hope that the new team that we have on justice reform will get together to figure out what they can do now to make a difference.
So just finally, I just wanted to touch on that point you made about referenda not necessarily being the best way to go about a discussion when it comes to drug reform. How would you like to see the discussions around drug reform progress? What do people need to ensure that they're informed in a, you know, a correct and balanced way?
Well, for starters, I think the challenge that we face with drug law reform is that we are debating this in a context where we've had, you know, 30 or so years of a rhetoric around the war on drugs as if that's a thing that works, which it does not. But I think, you know, people's attitudes and beliefs have been shaped by them. So we're working against, or we're having to turn around beliefs and attitudes about drugs and drug laws that are not grounded in evidence but have been, you know, have dominated the discourse for the last 30 years. So you have your work cut out for you, I think, to really shift how people see the role of the regulation of drugs in our communities. The problem with the simplistic, with the referendum, of course, is that people can't indicate nuance. They can't say, well, actually, I do support alternative resolutions for people in the criminal justice system because I can see that putting them in prison does nothing to help them with their drug addiction. Oh, but I'm worried about the availability of cannabis in my community if it's legal. That's an understandable anxiety to have, but the problem with a referendum is you don't get to communicate that complexity. You get yes or no. And I think that in order to walk people through what is, you know, quite a confronting but ultimately I think much more safe and much more responsible system, you know, you need time and you need faith and you need leadership. You know, you need people to go out there and advocate for why the law that the officials have written is the best response to the status quo. And that's really what was missing in this referendum process.
That was Tanya Sawicki-Mead from Just Speak, speaking on the preliminary cannabis referendum results. Have you had any thoughts on the preliminary results of the referendums and this discussion or any of the pieces later in the show? Feel free to send me a text on 5395 or give me a call in studio on 309 3879. Would love to hear from you, but we'll be right back with a live interview with Dr. Elizabeth Kedikedi from the Green Party just after this. Here is Red Death at 6:14 by the White Stripes.
Turning red.
Hi, I'm Ken.
Hi, Ken.
It's been 6 months since I've listened to Gin. Not going to lie, I still miss it. The feeling when the primo tunes are pouring out, the smooth grooves, the weird songs have got flute in them.
Hey, what's that in his ear?
My ear? No, what?
That's a headphone.
No.
This guy's hurting some gin right now.
It's already out on us. Else.
If this guy's going to have some gin, I want some too.
Everyone loves a bit of gin, and no one's going to blame you if you take an earful every Tuesday, 1 till 4. Gin plays all the good notes that go down easy with a lingering, vibed-out aftertaste. The Tuesday 1 to 4 with Gin, thanks to Bikes and Beyond, your e-bike and e-transport specialists.
The sun, whose light and warmth are in everyday use, has its own places. Sunrise, midday, sunset and midnight. Common sense has made us think of time as an infinite river and rebuke it for snatching away our moments of happiness. Be equally inclined to praise the river for carrying our future joys towards us. When you peel a potato, think of God not in the peeled potato, but in the act of peeling. Likewise, when lighting fireworks, seek God not when lighting, but in the lighting. Wileys, 220 Hobson Street. Fireworks on sale till late, November 2nd to 5th. Over 18 ID required. When the wind blows, the grass bends.
Wednesdays, one to four bridge. Tune in for your fair share of great open-minded tracks. A wide range of supportive and encouraging music with Bridge.
Kick back and chill with the Wednesday 1 to 4 with Bridge. Only on 95 BFM. Thanks to the same old Ponsonby Social Club.
Why should New Zealanders care so much about this?
Because your children will curse you if you don't.
The Wire.
You're tuned into The Wire on 95BFM with Jemima. We are back with a live interview. This election, Dr. Elizabeth Kirikiri has entered Parliament as one of the Green Party's 10 MPs this term. Dr. Kirikiri is a Māori LGBTQ plus activist and scholar, and she is here on the phone with me now. How are you?
Kia ora, Jemima. Thank you. I'm great.
Great.
I'm loving it.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. I can imagine it's a very exciting, sort of crazy time for you to be, getting involved with Parliament things now.
It absolutely is. I've just found somewhere to live for when I have to come to Wellington. We're just sorting out office spaces and all of those things, so it's still... things have not yet settled.
Oh, I can imagine. I can imagine. So, obviously, the Green Party has had a successful election this time round. How does it feel to be a part of the Green Party's parliamentary caucus this term?
It feels great. The thing is that for the last year, because of my role as Kai Whakahaere of Te Roku Pounamu, our Māori network, I've been in caucus for the last year. So I've been coming down to Wellington and sitting in our meetings, looking at bills, all of that work. So I'm more familiar, but it's actually really, really different sitting there as an MP.
I can imagine. What are those differences that you're sort of feeling now that you're taking on those all those new responsibilities?
Yes, that's part of it, is that now I'm responsible for some of these. You know, we're still in the process of deciding which portfolios we're going to hold and then which of us will be working directly with Labor through our areas of cooperation that have been identified in our agreement. And so all of that is still shaking down. So now when I look at bills, it's like, oh, I'm actually going to be responsible for talking about this in the Select Committee. So that's massively different.
I can imagine.
The power, yes, but the power has shifted. I'm not a volunteer leader within the organisation and our party. I've shifted to this new place and I've got, I guess, the power of being an MP to whatever extent a backbencher is. Now I can speak in a different voice. I can represent our communities in a different way and I'm very excited about that.
That's great. So let's just talk a little bit about what you'll bring to Parliament. It has been well covered by the media that you're an activist. What parts of your background in this space will you bring to the table?
So definitely all of those things. Of course, the things I'm most well known for around Rainbow, around youth development, suicide prevention, violence prevention, the things I care deeply about. But I guess the main thing I really want to be focusing on is about the health and well-being of our people. And so whatever that might look like in terms of actual pure health areas and disability, but it might be also about what gives us life, where's our creativity, what doesn't often get talked about is that I've been self-employed for 20 years. And so I know how to run a small business. I have, you know, occasionally have staff or these tax things I know about, but I'm never the person in those conversations.
Absolutely. I can imagine that's sort of an interesting thing to experience now that, you know, you're getting a lot of media attention being, you know, new Green Party MP, that the way the media frames you is interesting. Mm-hmm. It must be an interesting thing to be like, oh, okay.
it is, and because that then frames how people who are increasingly coming up and recognising me.
Totally.
And so I'm used to being recognised inside my field, people who do research or in rainbow communities, but it's quite on the taxi this morning. I got in, it's a little grey-haired Pākehā guy. I get into the taxi and he goes, congratulations on becoming a new MP.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I'm like, whoa, that is adorable. We had this lovely conversation on the way in. But it's things like that. It's like, oh, wow, that kind of profile. I've been told to expect it, but it's still like, oh, I can see what this looks like.
And is that something that you sort of want to, I don't know, maybe tackle if the media continues to look at you in a certain way or frame you in a certain way? Is that something you'd like to sort of push back against and be like, oh, I've done these other things too, and this is also a big part of me?
Yeah, I think it'll come through in my work.
Absolutely.
Because it's not good enough, and I think I've... again covered well that we might be the queerest. You can't see that I'm doing quotation marks with my fingers. Parliament, but actually it's the work. It doesn't matter what is our orientation or what's our gender identity if we don't do the work to represent all of our community. And I feel like that's when people get to know me a bit better. They'll see what I do in that space but other things. So, for example, I'm a visual artist. I love design. And so there's going to be things where I look at the way I look at any topic, say, where is the art in this? Where is the creativity? Where's the design? And it just gives me a slightly different lens to how I see things and also then how I might design a strategy or a way of moving forward with a particular issue.
So I'd just like to move on to hear your thoughts on the cooperation deal between Labor and the Greens this term. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I was actually a member of our negotiation crew. And so I wasn't sitting at the table, but I was. The Greens have a process where we have a group representing the party that talks with and feeds back into the ones who are sitting at the table. And so we've been working towards this for quite a while. And who could have seen, who could have foresaw the election results that we had?
Mm.
And so we have to be really pragmatic and say, what is the best we can do for people and planet? And what are the most critical roles we need to play in this parliament to ensure progress on those key areas? But also, how do we make sure we progress and have a clear voice in other areas? Where not necessarily that we disagree with Labor, because there's a lot of areas where we do agree, but it's that thing of saying, well, how far and how fast you might want to do those things. Because, you know, climate change, we need to do something quite quickly.
Quite quickly, absolutely.
Quite quickly. And some of the issues that are affecting our whānau, we need to do those much more quickly than I suspect Labor would is interested in doing. But also we still needing to see how they're rolling out and how they're going to put their campaign and their other policies into place. So I think for me, I'm a person who's come from not very much and always seen that building relationships is a key way of making things move, of creating change and having a clear strategy, having clarity of purpose. So I think that's part of what I bring to the space. I bring it to everything I do because I need to be really clear about staying authentic in this place, not letting things go to my head, and making sure that I'm doing the work based on what people on the ground, people who are working at the coalface, what they're feeding back to us.
So what I took away from that was that obviously it's important to, you know, agree with the Labor Party, but it is also a role that the Green Party has to hold Labor accountable in the decisions that are made over the next 3 years. And you did also talk about that before as well with, you know, being the queerest parliament of, you know, ever, that we still need to be holding the government accountable to, action those things. Is that correct?
That was really good. So yes, we've got the ministerial position and that gives us actual real power and resource in particular areas. We have these areas of cooperation, which means that we're very much aligned in those areas about what is needing to be done. And then we have everything else is fair game. And so even though there are areas where we may disagree on the topic itself or the way of addressing it, it's the core thing. I think it's a green code of ours, but it's in our agreement that we'll just do this respectfully. We can do politics in a mana-enhancing way and actually try to avoid the ugliness that Parliament is so well known for, and I believe one of the many reasons why a lot of Māori don't vote. And so we want to be in there modelling proper relationships, mana-enhancing.
So just finally, I just wanted to know whether you have any particular goals this parliamentary term, some achievements that you'd like to have at the end. Or is that a big question?
No, I'm thinking it's like, oh, radio doesn't like silence. Are they... Okay, people, I'm thinking this particular legislation that I really want to see to go through on for people who are trans, intersex and non-binary that got held up in the last term, want to make sure that that happens. This particular thing for young people, and especially around mental health and suicide prevention, that is an epidemic, I think, of equal proportions. It's hard to compare anything to COVID because of the international context that we're in and the impact it's having on everybody's lives. But it's just brought into stark relief for me that certain lives matter more than others. And the way that we approach our policies, our strategies, our laws, make that very obvious. And the disparities that exist across the health sector, across education and all other parts of this world, of our world. And so I just want to be able to have a particular area where I can say, I worked my guts out and then I shifted something. And sometimes that might even just be shifting the mind of the minister who's in charge of something that I have no control over. And sometimes it'll be something because I help push the law through. But whatever it is, that the people I represent, the communities that I'm part of, can look at that and say, Elizabeth leaned in and made a difference. Elizabeth worked hard for us. That's what I want people to be able to say.
Fantastic. That's awesome. Thank you so much for speaking to me today. I will let you go because I'm sure it's very busy over there for you. But thank you so much for giving us your time.
No, you're very welcome.
Thank you. Oh, thank you so thank you so much. Okay. Ka kite.
Ka kite.
That was Dr. Elizabeth Kerikeri from the Green Party speaking a little bit about her new experience being a new MP for the Green Party in Parliament this term. We will be right back after this. This is Tyrants by Pop Strangers.
Yeah. don't know, and frankly, the whole thing gives me the heebie-jeebies.
The Wire.
You're tuned into The Wire on 95BFM. I'm Jemima, and I am your host for the hour. Stats New Zealand has announced that the 2023 census will include questions regarding sex at birth, gender identity, and sexual orientation. I spoke to Frances Arnes, who is the Executive Director of Rainbow Youth, about this announcement and what the change will mean for Rainbow communities. We also discuss whether the inclusion of these questions in the census has been a long time coming. Here is Frances. The 2023 census will now include questions on sex at birth, gender identity and sexual orientation. What is Rainbow Youth's thoughts on this?
We're really relieved to see the inclusion of these questions for the census, and it's definitely been a long time coming.
Why is it important for this data to be collected for the Rainbow community?
Yeah, well, I mean, the census is a really key source, possibly the most important source of data about our population. And so forever, we haven't had any data about the true size of the Rainbow communities within New Zealand. And that makes it really difficult for us to make a case for funding for our community organisations, but also to know, you know, how to best support our communities, what our communities look like, how that might be changing over time. Like, there's so much in that that is really key in order to improving outcomes for our communities.
The General Manager of Social and Population Insights at Stats NZ has said that the way society is changing means it's timely to include these subjects in the census. What are your thoughts on this idea that including these questions now is a timely thing?
To be honest, it's a bit insulting. Rainbow identifying people have always existed. You know, before colonisation, the diversity of gender and sexuality was a celebrated part of Māori society. And so really all this is doing is undoing some of the really discriminatory and harmful institutions that have existed since colonisation. So I'm not sure if I'd agree it's timely, but it's absolutely necessary and probably more overdue.
Now, the census is going to be held in 2023, which is still a couple of years away. Is there anything that's happening now within the Rainbow communities to keep up with the different people that are part of it and their various, you know, health issues and other issues going on with?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, that's one thing about our communities is that we're incredibly resourceful and driven. There's several research projects happening to help us better understand the needs and experiences of our communities. Just recently, a PhD was completed by Brodie Fraser and Otago University around rainbow homelessness in New Zealand. There's some helpful statistics that have come out of the latest Youth 12 study. There's another study that's been done by John Fennity, a youth census type study to understand rainbow experiences of young people. Like, there's lots of different bits and pieces happening, but obviously, like, the census is such a key source of data and such a respected source of data, particularly when it comes to those larger national funders and particularly for government as well. So that's really key.
What changes do you expect to see happen following the statistics being gathered in the 2023 census?
Well, look, I hope that we're going to see some changes before then. But what we would hope to see is better recognition of the needs of our communities and better responses, particularly from government agencies, to what's needed for our communities. We would anticipate that, you know, at least 15% of the population would identify as part of a rainbow community. And so that's a real call to action for the government to do something in response to the really disproportionate representation across a number of negative health outcomes.
That was Frances Arnes, the Executive Director of Rainbow Youth, speaking on the 2023 census and the inclusion of sex, gender and sexual orientation questions. Next up, I spoke to Elizabeth Haig, the Freshwater South Manager for the Department of Conservation Te Papa Atawhai, about a new citizen science app that tracks blockages in the passageways of freshwater fish in New Zealand. We also talked about how the public can get involved to assess the extent of barriers in our rivers and waterways. I began by asking Elizabeth to explain the NIWA app that assesses different passageways for fish.
NIWA's got a citizen science app. And the fish passage assessment tool is one of the tools within that app. So you can download it from the App Store. And basically, you can use the app to assess different passageways for fish. So say, like, for instance, in my neighborhood, we've got some culverts that run under some, like, roadway bridges. I could just walk down the street and whip out my smartphone and go through the app and take some pictures. If you take like a mandarin with you or even just grab a stick from the bank, you can assess the flow. And then you put all that in there and, you know, press save, and it goes up and becomes part of a spatial layer that we've got that assesses the risk to fish of those passageways.
Why is it important for our waterways to be free flowing for these fish?
We've got so many native fish species that use the ocean and fresh water as parts of their life cycle. Some fish spawn in fresh water but then go out to sea to live, and some do it the opposite way around, like tuna where or eels, where they actually spawn somewhere up near Tonga, but they live the rest of their life out in fresh water here in New Zealand. And so if there's any impediments to those different fish species being able to use kind of all the way from the ocean up into rivers and streams, then it means that they can't complete their life cycle and live their full life.
Is this something that's a major concern at the moment for freshwater fish species in New Zealand? Is blockages and passageways a big problem at the moment?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're still getting a grip on exactly how big a problem it is, but we know for a fact that of our 51 native freshwater fish species, 22 are threatened with extinction. And so, like, it's an obvious pressure that we can work to fix, where we can give them more access to habitat, because we do know that habitat loss has contributed to the threat to those native fish species. And so, yeah, for my team, it's definitely one of our key focuses, is working with other agencies in Mana Whenua on how we can address fish passage issues.
And so that loss of habitat comes from human development, is that correct?
Well,
you know, urban development.
So that's one contributor, for sure, is urban development. But a lot of different things can cause blockages to fish passage, whether that's a significant drop at the downstream end when there's culverts put in, and that can happen in rural environments as well. Disconnections between the water upstream and downstream. So like the building of dams, whether they be like little earthen dams to, like, you know, the big concrete dams. You can also have, if you have the channel kind of augmented at all and it creates too fast a flow, that can actually prevent fish from being able to swim upstream because it's just too much velocity. And then there's also weirs that can be too hot. So there's lots of different, I mean, you can find in both the rural and the urban environment, you know, different examples of where maybe fish passage has been impeded.
You said before that you and your team are still working on figuring out how big of an issue this is with passageways being blocked for fish moving throughout our waterways in New Zealand. Is that why it is important that everyday people get this app and use it to help your team out?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and it's really helping out, like, the kind of Team New Zealand that's working on it. So because we have a fish passage advisory group that actually has folks from Auckland Council, folks from Mana Whenua, engineering groups, regional council, a whole bunch of different stakeholders, Ministry for the Environment. So it's really, we've got, like, quite a big team that's working on this. And it's thinking about not only identifying through, like, tools like the app where fish passage is impeded, but then also how we can fix it and how we can make sure that with new projects that they are built with fish passage in mind already.
What is the solution to natural causes of waterway blockages, and is this something you're focusing on?
So natural fish passage impediments is, like natural processes, isn't something that we're really looking at. We're really focused on where people are causing the problem, because in a lot of cases with the natural impediments, it can be actually part of the natural cycle in a watershed. What I would say, though, is we are thinking about the effects that climate change can have, too. And so, you know, with increasing drought, that can cause issues where a river or a stream, the water flow is disconnected. So that's another aspect that we're thinking about is if droughts are going to be more common in the future, what will that mean for the fish and fish migration in terms of water flows?
Fantastic. Is there anything else you'd like to add there, Elizabeth?
Oh, I think I would encourage people to go check out the app. We've got a video on the DOC website. So I did a blog for World Fish Migration Day with my team. And in there, there's a link to a video we've made that shows you how to use the app. And also just encourage people to learn more about our awesome native fish and, you know, the really incredible journey they go on through their life cycle.
That was Department of Conservation Freshwater Manager Elizabeth Heeg speaking on some of the issues surrounding the assessment of passageways of freshwater fish and how the public can get involved by using an app to pin down where barriers and blockages exist in our rivers and waterways. So definitely check that out on the App Store and get out there and help the fish swim to where they need to be. We will be right back after this. You're listening to The Wire on 95BFM with Jemima.
Yes. I swallow my pride, I know we tried and tried, but let's move on. I follow that treasure map to fool's gold and found your charm. Now my neck marks a spot on my brain. We fight and cuss and bite and cuss the same. I think we rushed a bit. There ain't no love in it. We're self-centered, self-medicating ourselves. Say you love me, but you self-deprecating out loud. How about you go and find some help?
Please.
And it can't be me. I ain't gonna pick up when it's 3:30 and slip out your room when it's 6:05 and then feel sick for the rest of the day.
Okay, I get it. You're right. You're winning. It's fine. Forgiving. Goodbye. Goodbye. Okay, I get it. You're right.
Time I catch you acting cool, your pride's in the way, and it don't make. Why you always acting like a fool? You don't make me feel so brand new. Every time I catch you acting cool, your pride's in the way, and it don't make sense to
it's
me.
It's weird, I go from vices to vice, and the when I got a rap on the vice. She don't believe me, she wanna be right. Maybe I'm raw, maybe I'm high. Try kick the habit gon' fight back, but it's like that, she won't believe all of the stories I lie through my teeth. Still I'm ignoring the signs of defeat. I ain't shit, no MCM. I get bent or I just spin more. I can't be your MCM. I'm on 9 all day, I'm right now. Any 10, baby, I spend my last on 10. She gon' kill my eyes, I swear. So she blowin' up myself, talking about.
Okay, I get it, you're right.
Catch you acting cool, your pride's in the way, and it don't make. Why you always acting like a fool? You don't make me feel so brand new. Every time I catch you acting cool, your pride's in the way, and it don't make sense to
I've
me.
I've been chain smoking and token scraping for 50s and 100s. Never had the face to sell it, but I got the brains to buy it. And I've never been a pretty crier, but I'll never be a motherfucking liar. Breeding all the hate and desire, I stay clear of you and get higher. Listen, these boys are bottom feeders, they never what they seem, and they're overrun with greed. And I know I'm just getting sick of all this masculine bullshit. Your shtick is just to get lit, got me wanting to hit the kill switch. But yeah, okay, I get it, you're right, you're winning. It's fine, forgiving, goodbye, goodbye. Okay, I get it, you're right, you're winning. It's fine, forgiving, goodbye, goodbye.
Okay, I get it, you're right, you're winning. It's fine, forgiving, goodbye, goodbye. Okay, I get it, you're right, you're winning. It's fine, forgiving, goodbye, goodbye.
Kei te whakarongo koe ki te wire, marunga irirangi pō.
The Wire.
That was Why You Always Acting Like a Fool by Amoogie featuring Church, Church and AP. You're tuned into The Wire on 95BFM with Jemima. For our final story today, I spoke to the National Manager of Marketing and Communications for the New Zealand Blood Service, Oscar Burge, about the recent changes that have been made to the criteria for plasma donation. There have been a significant increase in the need for plasma to help those with compromised immunity. So the Blood Service is reaching out to encourage people to donate plasma. Here is Oscar speaking on the criteria changes and how you can get involved in donating plasma. What changes have been made to the plasma donation criteria?
So New Zealand Blood Service, we've just recently made some very important changes actually to the height and weight criteria for donating plasma and also the booking process. So the changes now mean that anyone can donate plasma if they weigh over 50 kilos or more, or over 150 centimetres or taller, and meet the donor eligibility criteria.
So is that a lower criteria than it has been previously? It makes it easier for more people to donate blood?
Yes, so the criteria changes now make it much easier for easier and available to more people to donate plasma, and that's because previously we did have height and weight criteria, which meant that a lot of, I guess, if you were especially females, didn't quite meet the criteria, whereas now, because we have a very high need for plasma, we've reviewed the criteria and we've actually opened it up so that more people can now donate.
So why is there a need for plasma right now?
Yeah, so plasma can be made up to 11 different blood products. And what we have seen is a increase in the need and demand of over 12% every single year. Now, this is because plasma helps people with, for example, autoimmune disorders who don't have effectively immunity themselves. And by having a regular transfusion of plasma product, it means they can actually live a normal life like you and I. When they have these transfusions, it's often regular and it's often lifelong, and that's why the demand is increasing.
What is the process of donating plasma? How do you sign up and get involved?
Yep, so we'd love people to go onto our website and check the blood donor eligibility quiz. So go to that quiz, and then if you are eligible to give plasma and you are between 18 to 60 years old as well, what you can do is sign up using our booking form online, and then one of our team will give you a call to find a place for you to be able to donate that plasma. You can donate plasma at one of our 9 donor centres around the country, and we've got a few mobile plasma locations in Auckland currently, and we're looking to roll that out over the nation over the next coming year. And when you come in to donate, it's very similar to a regular blood donation, so you'll be asked to fill out a health questionnaire, have a confidential interview with one of our nurses, and then pop onto one of our comfortable beds. And with plasma, you'll have the needle in the arm, but there'll be a little machine next to you which actually will take your blood, spin it next to you, and will actually extract the plasma out of your body and then return your red cells to you. So it's quite a very interesting process. That repeats a couple of times until we've collected the right amount of plasma, and then you can have a cup of tea and a biscuit and relax, and the whole process should take just under an hour and a half from the time you walk in to when you walk out.
So you get to watch it next to you, sort of moving around and taking things out and putting it back into you?
Yeah, so there's a mini centrifuge in the machine. You can't quite see inside it, but you will see the plasma separation and fill up the bag. So it's a liquid gold colour for the plasma, and then the red cells return to you, which is also why a lot of donors say they don't feel as tired afterwards, because obviously you get all your iron and red stuff back.
Wow. And then so finally, why is it important that New Zealanders donate blood and plasma?
Look, it's so important because there is no substitute for blood. And the only way we can have that blood available in the hospitals for people need it is thanks to voluntary, generous blood donors around New Zealand. With, you know, blood only lasts, red blood cells only last 35 days. And as I mentioned, the demand and need for plasma is ever increasing. So we're really looking for more people to become blood and plasma donors. Specifically, and so we'd really encourage people to check out our website, see if they're eligible, give us a call on our 0800 number if you've got any questions, and we'd love to see people donating.
That was Asuka Burge from the New Zealand Blood Service speaking about donating plasma and the change in criteria for plasma donation, which opens up the opportunity to so many more people.
That was The Wire.
Ko ira te hōtaka katoa mō tēnei wiki. That brings us to the end of our show for another week. A big thanks to everyone who spoke with me for the show today. Tanya Sawicki-Mead, Dr. Elizabeth Kirikiri, Francis Arns, Elizabeth Heag and Asuka Burge. That's it for the show today. Look forward to a whole rest of the week of some awesome wires at midday every day. We love bringing you the latest news, so tune in if you want to hear anything that's going on in the world right now, because there's a lot going on in the world right now, internationally and nationally. Hope you're having a wonderful day out there and, you know, enjoying the weird, overcast, humid weather. I will see you next time on Tuesday. Have a lovely, lovely afternoon. Ka kite.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.